From the headquarters of the American Radio Relay League in Newington, Connecticut, this is ARRL, The Doctor Is In, a bi-weekly podcast addressing common and some not-so-common technical issues in amateur radio. This podcast is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. And now, here's your host, QST Editor-in-Chief Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and the Doctor himself, QST Contributing Editor Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Welcome to The Doctor Is In. I'm Steve Ford, WB8IMY.
And I'm Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Let's take up the topic, Joel, of the automatic gain control, better known as AGC, of course. Many transceivers have a control for AGC, fast, medium, or slow, in the case of the particular rig that I have. But a lot of hams really don't know how to apply that, or even in some cases, what AGC really does.
Okay, well, let's talk about that. It's a good topic.
Enlighten us.
Okay, I'll do what I can. Automatic gain control is a variation of something that used to be called, or probably still is called, automatic volume control, AVC. And what that did, that came about in the days before World War II, and I'm not sure exactly when, I guess between the wars at some point, because they didn't have it in World War I, as far as I know. Vehicle broadcast radios were, for AM, the AM band, were popular up until, you know, the days before World War II. And initially, they had a lot of problems with the volume changing with signal strength. As the vehicle traveled, the signals would vary widely as they went up and down hills or into tunnels or whatever, between structures. If you didn't have something to manage that, the received volume, the intensity of the audio signal in the car would go up and down with it. And somebody figured out that because we're listening to a standard amplitude modulated signal with a steady carrier, we could use the carrier level of the received signal to adjust an automatic volume control circuit that would maintain relatively constant volume as the carrier went up and down in level. That worked quite well. And typically it was set so it would change relatively slowly so you wouldn't have things happening too fast because the carrier was solid. Now that worked fine for AM. Problem is it did not work very well for CW. A couple reasons. One reason, the early receivers had a beat frequency oscillator that went to the same detector that where the AVC circuit was, and actually the BFO would engage the AVC and the AVC would work to keep the BFO level the same. But the other problem was the AVC circuitry, the time constant, was such that it would not be particularly conducive to operating CW, where the AVC would try to follow the CW pulses pumping up and down the gain as the other person was keying. So what people did from the time receivers with AVC came out until we got into essentially the single sideband era, we'll talk about that in a minute, they basically just turned the AVC off. Communications receivers had a capability to turn the AVC off. Sometimes it was called AVC or MVC, manual volume control, or manual gain control, automatic gain control. You could select between the two, and that would just turn off the AVC function. And then what you wanted to do to listen to CW is you'd actually try to get the levels right at the detector. You'd turn the audio gain up and turn the RF gain down for strong signals so that you didn't overload the detection process. Because with the AVC off, you could very easily overload the front portions of the receiver, because the AVC acts upon the RF stages of the receiver and IF stages to reduce the gain. So if you don't have it on there, a really strong signal can be quite distorted. So you'd use the RF gain control to adjust the level, and the audio gain control would stay at a fairly high level. That was the normal operation for CW. And of course, when single sideband first started being popular, and I'm thinking that's early 50s, I guess some was done even earlier than that, but it wasn't really popular until into the 50s. People had the same receivers they had before then. So what they did is they used the same exact technique for single sideband. They basically adjusted the filtering so it would just take in the sideband that they wanted to listen to, if you could. I mean, not all receivers had that kind of selectivity capability, but you'd center the sideband in your band pass. You'd adjust the beat frequency so that the signal would sound proper, depending on which sideband it was on, and you'd adjust the signal level using the RF gain control to avoid overloading the stages, same way as you would with a CW signal. That worked, kind of, and I remember doing that with many receivers that I had in that era. The problem is that you had no automation to that. So therefore, if you're, let's say you're in a round table, or you're, worst case, you're trying to work a DX station. So you have everything cranked up so you could hear this weak DX station, and a guy in the next town also wants to work that station. So you had a real problem with blowing your ears out on your headphones if you have multiple signals in the same frequency range at much different power levels, especially if you had a big antennas and got really strong signals. And of course, the strong signals would also cause distortion, which would make it tougher to copy the good signal as well. So the solution was, in the single sideband, and this was popular starting with the single sideband or dedicated single sideband receivers or transceivers, which of course also worked very well on CW and usually had provision for AM as well. And that was, instead of measuring the RF signal at the detector, they would actually measure the audio signal coming out of the detector and adjust the gain based on the strength of that. So that kept the signal from blowing your ears out and allowed it to still have the capability to keep the signal level relatively constant. Now, the other difference was that in an AM signal that the AVC was set up for, you could have the AVC act relatively quickly on the carrier level because the carrier itself would be steady. So you could count on that being steady, and if a carrier dropped, then you need to increase the gain and vice versa. Of course, a single sideband signal doesn't have a carrier. The audio itself changes with the voice characteristics. So you have to kind of think about how you want to do this. If you had it set so that it responded too quickly, the AGC would try to follow the voice of the person talking because it would just be going up and down with speech. And if you did that perfectly, you'd flatten the speech out so you couldn't hear the person at all. You just make the person into a steady kind of in between. So the idea was to make the AGC for single sideband very quickly attack the gain to respond to the signal before it has a chance to wipe you out. And then instead of going back to increasing the gain as the signal disappears, hold it steady for a period of time. So it responds to the start of the single sideband signal and it keeps the level the same for some period of time. And so it's a fast attack, slow decay. So while somebody is talking, the signal stays at approximately the same length, same strength as it comes out the receiver, responding to that particular station's variation in voice. And then if the person stops talking, it gradually, the AGC falls off and the gain picks up for the next station. So you got two variable times here. One is the attack time, one is the decay time. Some systems allow you to actually adjust both of those separately.
Yes.
Some of them have settings, menu settings that say how long each of them are for if you have, as you described, slow, medium, and fast, or fast, medium, and slow, or depending on how you look at it.
Something in between, yes.
Or something in between. You can adapt that to the kind of signal that you're listening to and how fast the exchanges go back and forth. If you have two stations doing very quick back and forth kind of communication and they're at different strengths, you want to probably have the decay slower, have it happen more rapidly than if you had one person who's talking at a particular level for a while and you want to keep the gain set the same during their conversation. So that's the reason for having it. And typically, depends on the kind of communication you're doing, what you want to set it for. In a casual round table kind of thing, you may want to set for slow because the person's going to be talking for a long time. You don't want things to react too quickly in between their syllables. But if you have a very quick DX kind of short call kind of thing and you want to make sure you hear the DX station in between the people calling them, you may want to set it to fast or medium. CW, usually you want to set it to fairly fast so it can catch up to the CW. It wants to maintain the level between elements of the code. So you don't want it to change in between two dots in a row, but you don't want it to stay set for too long because oftentimes on CW that the exchanges go back and forth fairly quickly.
Yes.
So you have all of those parameters to deal with.
I know when I'm operating digital modes, I like to have my AGC on fast, probably for similar reasons that you described for CW.
Yeah, well, actually, digital modes, the carrier level, the level of the signal is constant while it's there. So you don't have the variation that you have with CW or single sideband.
No, that's true. Let's take a break, Joel, for DX Engineering, and
okay,
we will be back.
Remember your first contact? The excitement of that first CQ? The exhilaration of making your first QSO? At DX Engineering, we know that feeling too. That's why we've committed to making your on-air experience the very best it can be. DX Engineering ships quickly, which means less station downtime. And we have free shipping for almost any order over $99. We've recently expanded our inventory, so you don't have to wait for the gear you need. DX Engineering has introduced all new radio products and revived legendary brands, all with the goal of helping you enjoy amateur radio. Most importantly, the DX Engineering team is here to help you. You've got a team of highly experienced hams ready to work out technical issues, answer questions, and help you optimize your station performance. That excitement you felt from the first contact, it can happen again and again with help from DX Engineering. DXEngineering.com. That's DXEngineering.com.
And we are back, Joel. And I wanted to address, or have you address, really, I mean, you're the doctor after all, the subject of the different settings for AGC that many transceivers provide, really.
That's true. Some of them just have slow, medium, and fast, or fast, medium, and slow, depending on which way your knob works. But some have either menu adjustments or other adjustments that you can make for specific parameters. And I can talk about a couple of them here. There may be others, but the ones that are most commonly encountered, in my experience, are AGC threshold. Now, one thing about AGC is you want to set, be able to set, if you can, the AGC to only start acting on signals that are above the noise level. The reason for this is if the AGC is set so that it actually acts on the noise itself, that reduces the gain of the receiver even when there's no signal there. So that means a weak signal that's down near the noise has reduced gain. You'll be less likely to hear it. So you want to adjust the AGC threshold generally to be above the noise level.
That's a good point.
Now, of course, this is different for each band, each season, the bandwidth right. of your receiver is set to, the particular sunspot activity of the time. So ideally, this would be almost a big knob on the front of your radio. I haven't seen any with that, but
no,
often they have menu settings, and you can say, well, you know, for today's operation, I think I'm going to, on this band, I'm going to change my threshold to a different value. Now, I haven't seen any that have thresholds that can be set per band or no. per hour of the day, because of course it's different day and night and so forth. That's a fairly important parameter to be able to deal with. My transceiver happens to have that as a menu adjustment. The next one is the AGC slope. This is a little bit of a subtle kind of thing. If the AGC worked perfectly as we defined it, all signals would sound exactly the same at the same level. The gain would be adjusted automatically and you could go from strong signals to weak signals and everybody would sound the same, which may be exactly what you want. On the other hand, it may be you'd like to be able to say, Sam, your signal's a little louder than Harry's. And of course, if the AGC is exactly right, you can't tell that by listening. You can look at the S meter and maybe get it, and you'll see how the AGC action. Mm-hmm. But you can actually set the slope of some transceivers' AGC so that while the strong signal will not bound through and wipe out your ears, it'll be a little bit higher than a weak signal. So, you know, sometimes that could be beneficial if you want to be able to get a sense of this kind of thing. That's kind of subtle. Another thing that happens is that some transceivers have an AGC hold parameter that can provide a short hold time before the decay starts. You know, we talked about the fact that you have fast attack, slow decay. In the typical transceiver, the decay starts almost immediately and it sort of slowly tapers off. But you can also have it maintain the same level for a while before it starts to decay, and that's called AGC hold, and that can be beneficial, particularly for sideband. And the final parameter is, and sometimes this isn't even within the AGC, it can be someplace else, but there can be an AGC limiter. This is particularly important if you have the slope set to not particularly flat, but you can have an AGC limit that says, no matter how I adjust everything else, I'm not going to let anything louder than a certain level get through the receiver. And some transceivers actually have a limiter that's separate from the AGC and the audio circuit that does essentially the same thing. So those are the ones, I think those are the main ones you might encounter.
Yes.
And you have sort of a sense now of how they might help you.
All right, very good. Are you prepped for a question here?
Oh, yes.
And by golly, Joel, this question's from me. You're putting words in my mouth here.
Well, you occasionally send me questions on email, and you're a member, so why not?
Yes, let's showcase my ignorance here. And I'm going to read it just like we do all of our other questions. Steve, WB8IMY, asks, my 66-foot-long 40-through-6-meter off-center-fed dipole is presently at a height of about 25 feet, with most of it extending over my house. That's true. It seems to perform at about as one would expect, but if I went to a fair amount of effort, I might be able to raise it to 35 feet. The question is this. Would the additional 10 feet be worth the trouble? Would I notice an improvement? And you answered this, but you answer it again for the
audience. All right. I'm happy to do that. Because the reason I picked this is not just to put you on the spot, but because this is something this is a question that I get fairly frequently from people that wonder about changes in their antenna system. And if we have a horizontal antenna and we raise it above ground, we for sure will improve the amount of radiation at lower angles. This means we'll be able to get a stronger signal at greater distances, which a lot of people like if they want to work DX. Now, if you just want to work into your local net, maybe it doesn't make so much difference. The amount of increase will depend on the frequency. My usual rule of thumb is that horizontal antennas provide their best low-angle transmission at heights above half a wavelength. So you'll notice what happens. At your height of 25 feet, you're almost a half wave high on 17 meters, while at 35 feet, you're a half wave high on 20 meters. So what will happen will be over typical ground, the change in intensity at 5 degrees elevation, which is fairly low, but that's kind of where you want to be for DX on HF.
Yes.
Based on an EasyNIC model, the change will be less than 2 dB on 40 meters because you're way below, you're down about an eighth of a wavelength.
Oh, yeah. There.
More than 3 dB, so that's half a S unit on 20 meters, about 6 dB, a full S unit on 17 meters. So to my way of thinking, that would be a significant improvement. I mean, a full S unit on 17 meters
sure.
is worthwhile, and half an S unit on 20 meters is often a big deal if you're working somebody at the edges of your performance.
It can make a difference in some situations.
So really the answer depends on how interested you are in working DX and what bands you most want to work. If you mostly work on 40 meters, it's not going to make much difference, but on the higher frequency bands, it will make a lot of difference.
Okay. Well, you answered my question,
Joel. Well, I'm happy to do that. And anybody else's, if you...
Thank you very much, Joel.
My pleasure.
ARRL, The Doctor Is In, is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. For more information on amateur radio or the ARRL, visit us on the web at www.arrl.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for ARRL. If you have a question or comment for the doctor, send an email to doctor@arrl.org. Background music is courtesy of Ben Sound at www.bensound.com. This program is provided under the copyright of the ARRL. Until next time, I'm QST Managing Editor Becky Schoenfeld, W1BXY 73, and thanks for listening.